Blue moon, a full moon that occurs twice in 1 month, a figurative construct, much like yourselves.
Hey!
But the moon itself doesn't appear to be blue.
What?
Blue? Oh,
perfect.
Now we'll never get home.
No cause for alarm, my little Smurfs. If we're to open the portal home, I'll just have to smurf us a potion to invoke the blue moon.
Oh, you hear that, honey? They're only staying till an actual blue moon rises, which could happen if the little blue Santa man makes a magic potion, which at this point seems completely plausible.
Want a bite?
No, thank you.
Of course, the stars will need to be perfectly aligned.
Now's not the time to tempt fate. Now's not the time to dismiss official warnings. You need to take this seriously.
As the Gulf Coast of the U.S. prepares for the landfall of Hurricane Isaac, President Obama makes his plea to local residents.
As we prepare for Isaac to hit, I want to encourage all residents of the Gulf Coast to listen to your local officials and follow their directions, including if they tell you to evacuate. We're dealing with a big storm, and there could be significant flooding and other damage across a large area.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Armstrong can't park on Congo Square now. Cause they're there now, from canal to the fairgrounds. This government doesn't repair towns, it tears down the self-concepts of the descendants of ex-slaves. While ex-FEMA Chief Brown still gets paid and George Bush waves from the skies, he flies by an Air Force One, gets as close to the sun as he could manage, and Barbara Bush whispers that the tragedy is working out to our advantage. But how do you assess the damage when neglected levees let the lake walk to the river walk and talk is cheap? So I double up and repeat, ex-FEMA Chief Brown was still getting paid. While the price of oil was rising with the tides, and the children of ex-slaves still survive, and a wave crashes into the attic, and there's automatics in the hands of juvenile soldiers that told you to back that ass up, but keep bumping you against the wall before they march off to the cadence of they the fools and the pimped out Gucci suits, that we have permission to shoot first, ask questions later, curfew at 9, bringing Cajun Moon on the crossfader. What do you say to people who have no home? Is it Astrodome or Superdome, or move in with a relative, but then that's relative, and you have to move from NO to a Alaska or Utah, and you saw how they feel about you in the nightly news. Ain't no place like home, so it's gotta be the shoes that moved us from evacuees to refugees. They might as well burn the body of King Oliver in effigy and do a second line to Little Rascals. The rebirth of George Bush's legacy is FDM. And pass the blow, cause after the show is the after party, and after the party, NO still ain't the priority that I rock is. Bear witness, energy company profits ain't never been this strong. I swear, the heads of the top three oil companies must have brought gifts to Bush's manger when he was born.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, a special program of the NBC News and Special Events Department, heard each week at this time. Today, we present the third and last in a series of transcribed studies titled The Truth About Narcotics. Malcolm Johnson, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the International News Service, conducts a round table with foremost authorities on the narcotics epidemic. His guests were recorded at widely separated points: Washington, New York, Lexington, Kentucky, and so on. They include Richard Moser, Chief Counsel of the Senate Crime Investigating Committee, Dr. Victor H. Vogel, Head of the Government Hospitals for Drug Addicts, James Dumpson, Advisor to the New York Welfare Council, Senator Wiley of Wisconsin, Federal Narcotics Commissioner Harry Anslinger, and Austin McCormick, one of the country's foremost penologists, recently named Professor of Criminology at the University of California. Here to conduct the discussion is Malcolm Johnson.
In our two previous programs, we have established rather convincingly, I think, the scope of the current narcotics epidemic, the fact that it is primarily a big city problem, that it is also primarily a slum problem, although no segment of society is immune. We have also established that the menacing drug, above all others, is heroin, that the chief supply currently is through Italian sources, and that the resurgence of narcotics addiction is recent. that after virtually disappearing in the 1930s, addiction in the United States has risen sharply in the last 3 years. Is that right, Mr. Anslinger?
I've said it isn't confined to the United States, but it's pretty general throughout the world. It's a phenomenon, a post-war phenomenon, which we hope has reached its crest. For instance, Japan, which before the war didn't have a drug addict that we knew of, today finds a ratio of drug addiction almost equal to that in other countries, which is hard to explain. Now, nearly all these young people, as far as the United States goes, who become drug addicts come from homes where there is inadequate parental control, a lack of moral and ethical values, and a total disregard of human personality and personal responsibility.
Yes, and you have told us that the first reason, the main cause, is the availability of the drugs. Dr. Vogel, your charts on hospital admissions at Lexington and Fort Worth reflect this trend to teenage addiction, and I understand they represent pretty accurately the overall picture.
The figures along from 1935 up to 1947 are small and inconsequential. In 1948, there was a jump to 52 admissions over 22 the previous year. Then in 1949, we find a very decided increase and the demand of teenagers for treatment. It jumps to 210, I believe. Then in 1950, it really jumps to 440. We have had perhaps six patients as young as 15 and 14, and at least one patient only 13. This epidemic seems to be so far raging in large cities, particularly New York, Chicago, and to a lesser extent, Washington. Of the 158, in the two hospitals, on June 7, 1951, 87 or more than half were from New York, 24 were from Chicago, 15 from Washington, and 32 others scattered among large cities. By race, the chart shows that 38 were white and 120 were Negro.
Supply. From a P to a G, it's all about money. 10 beats for 10, bass pipe comes free. And people out there not hip to the fact. If you see somebody getting money for crack, he's the
dope man, dope man.
Hey man, give me a hit.
Dope man, dope
Yo,
man.
Yo, man, fuck that hit.
Dope man, dope man.
We just can't quit.
Dope man, dope man.
Well, suck this.
It's quite clear from our figures that the increase among young people is greater among the colored people than it is among the whites. We know quite definitely that there is no racial problem. As one of the witnesses testified, there's no segregation among addicts. The fact seems to be that addiction is attributable to a large extent to psychological factors. It's entirely possible that the reason the colored people seem to be becoming addicted at a faster rate than the whites is because they are subjected in some cases and in some cities to somewhat greater psychological strains. They may feel that they have economic disadvantages, and for that reason they feel a strain that causes them to turn to this sort of thing.
Professor McCormick? I'm very sorry even to have to refer to the racial connotations of this problem, but there's no question that they are present. Drug addiction is a habit of escape, and these kids especially are trying to escape from poverty, from frustration, from schools that have no longer any value or reality for them, or from the in-between zone where they don't have a real job and are still not in school. And they'll be found largely among those racial groups that are at present living in a deprived and at times discriminated against status.
Now we come to the nub of the matter. What are we going to do about it? How do we approach a solution? Mr. Dumpson?
Each addict in himself is a potential infector for those who have not been touched. So not only must you treat them, the one who has been addicted, but if you want to protect those who haven't been addicted, you have to treat him also. And we think that we want, in New York at least, facilities on a local level, because we feel that the follow-up supervision that is necessary after hospitalization needs to be coordinated with the facility, and it should be within the state of New York.
That would certainly help relieve the burden of the federal authorities.
That's my life, that's how it's cut. But you can get the real from the
Dope Man.
Yeah, that's me.
Dope Man.
Yo, can I get a G?
Dope Man.
Not as much as he can. Who am I?
The Dope Man.
Medical marijuana shops forced to shut down by the feds and owners threatened with legal action if they didn't obey.
Last week, dozens of stores were served with letters from the DEA. And as Kate Burgess tells us, the reason: area schools.
Cale Morgan is closing down his business.
You know, it was a little upsetting. There was, you know, some unrest amongst us and the rest of the volunteers.
Just over a year ago, Morgan helped open the Medicine Jar, a nonprofit medical marijuana dispensary that, up until last week, provided safe, affordable access to cannabis. Thursday, the DEA sent out this letter to his and 22 other pot dispensaries around town. The message: close up shop or else.
Sorry about the inconvenience and that we can't be here to serve you any longer.
Morgan didn't know it, but his store is technically less than 1,000 feet from a small private school run by the Epic Life Church.
The ironic part about the federal government saying that dispensaries need to be 1,000 feet away from the schools is, hey, where is most of the drugs sold to kids? In the school. Maybe we should start there.
How dare you?
Yo, Mr. Dope Man, you think you're slick. You sold crack to my sister and now she's sick. But if she happened to die because of your drug, I'm putting in your culo a 38 slug.
Henry Ford's first Model T was built to run on hemp gasoline, and the car itself was constructed from hemp. On his large estate, Ford was photographed among his hemp fields. The car, grown from the soil, had hemp plastic panels whose impact strength was 10 times stronger than steel. Henry Ford ran 40,000 vehicles on hemp fuel from only 10,000 acres. The emissions are what you exhale, and the next year's crop reconverts it back into oxygen. That's a natural cycle fuel. We think that our ethanol and biofuels and flex fuel systems are all the cutting edge, but biofuel development, of course, is nothing new. Way back in the 1930s, Henry Ford was hard at work in the alternative fuel sector, and in 1941, he constructed a hemp-fueled and hemp-bodied prototype car. The plastic body panels were composed of 70% cellulose fibers, including industrial strength, mixed with a resin binder, and apparently they were pretty sturdy. A guy beats on the trunk with an axe and it fails to leave a mark. Industrial hemp won't make you high. It has no THC in it. but its association with marijuana has historically been a major legal stumbling block.
Conspiracy theories.
Can't you see he's the man? Let me hear you applaud. He is more than a man. He's a shiny golden god. If you think it's time to rock and roll out of control, well then you know you've got to run the block. Sock, muffin, cock. Cause when you do, you think it's cool. All of the fools out of their jewels. Cause if you think it's time to,
if you think it's time to,
if you think it's time to rock and roll, he is going to kick your fucking ass. And you know his name is Kyle Gass. Rocking and fucking rolling and fucking rocking and fucking rolling.
Our goal would be to seek international permission, and we would come to the Congress and inform you and determine how best to approach this, whether or not we would want to get permission from the Congress. I think those are issues we would have to discuss as we decide what to do here.
We may never understand what leads anybody to terrorize their fellow human beings like this. Such violence, such evil, is senseless. It's beyond reason. They were mothers and fathers. They were husbands and wives, sisters and brothers, sons and daughters, friends and neighbors. They had hopes for the future, and they had dreams that were not yet fulfilled.
Another attack today by Afghan security forces claims the lives of more U.S. troops. Lisa Sylvester is monitoring that. Some of the other top stories in the Situation Room right now. What's the latest, Lisa?
Wolf, no one has claimed responsibility for today's attack by an Afghan soldier that left two U.S. troops dead in eastern Afghanistan. Coalition officials say NATO troops killed the attacker. They say at least 42 NATO troops have now been killed by Afghan soldiers or insurgents in disguise. Officials in southern Helmand province say also today 10 Afghan soldiers were gunned down by members of their own unit.
But having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
Violence call in Tacoma ended with a police officer fatally shooting a man. Tonight, we learned that man was active duty military. Tacoma Force Tricia Manning-Smith is live at Tacoma Police Headquarters with the latest. Tricia?
Police are not saying exactly what branch of the service. We don't know anything about where or how this gentleman may have served. All we know is that an officer reportedly felt threatened enough by him to fire on him.
Crime scene experts gather clues.
I was on the back porch with my son.
Neighbors watch.
Two gunshots.
Children play.
We didn't think nothing of it.
So Banu Lawson and her son became witnesses.
The girlfriend that was in the red shirt, I saw her getting dragged by the cops. Out of the yard, and then the cops had let her go.
What they saw was the sad ending to a life.
The individual is deceased. He's still at the scene, and there is a .45 caliber handgun at his side.
He's dead now. He's the same man who once took an oath to serve and to protect his country.
All of a sudden, pow, 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 and he drops. You know, pow, 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 and he drops.
Everybody wants safety. Everybody wants comfort. Everybody wants certainty. Everybody but me. I'm a man on fire, walking down your street.
Good evening, everyone. We begin tonight here on Como 4 News at 4 o'clock with breaking news out of Arlington,
where sheriff's deputies are right now in the midst of a gun battle.
Reports say initial shots were fired in a field near Highway 530. Now, details are still unfolding at this hour, but deputies are telling us that there is an active shooter on the loose, and there may be possibly two shooters.
We're still gathering information on how this started and how many people have been injured. Reports say deputies have been taking fire from several types of weapons, from handguns to high-powered rifles. We have two crews that are arriving on the scene. We will bring you the latest information as it comes in.
All of a sudden, pow, 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 and he drops. You know, pow, 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 and he drops.
Everybody wants safety.
Police officers in St. Paul, Minnesota are now on leave after this disturbing video went public. Take a look. It shows officers arresting a man for allegedly stalking a woman in the neighborhood and then kicking him in the chest. You see it there as he lay on the ground. He is heard on this tape actually shouting his innocence. The police department says it's doing an internal investigation. And the local police union has released a statement saying, in part, the video doesn't show everything that happened, and the officer is a good cop that was in a dangerous situation.
A
Justice Louis Brandeis once said, sunlight is the greatest disinfectant.
Now let's turn back to the Republican National Convention, which is set to start Monday. All week long, we've been talking to Republican strategist Marie Byron, who has all the details about this important event.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi there, Marie. Now, all of Tampa Bay is gearing up for the convention, but I understand no one's more excited than the area's gay prostitutes who are expecting record numbers of clients.
That's right, Andrea. This convention means increased sales for hotels, restaurants, and of course, the men who provide anonymous gay sex.
All right, now how much money will all those closeted Republican convention goers bring into the city, Marie?
A lot. The average Tampa area prostitute normally makes around $200 to $300 a week jerking off truck drivers behind the bus station.
I see.
Next week, they are expecting to make about 30 times that amount sucking off secretly gay Republicans.
Wow. So the convention goers will be slipping out of prayer breakfast and Mike Huckabee speeches all week long to go trawl Tampa side
streets. Right. And all those tricks add up.
They sure do.
Then you figure the fact that these delegates are so repressed and filled with self-hatred.
Yes.
They tend to like the filthiest, kinkiest sex acts imaginable.
Oh, that's right.
Tends to cost more.
Right. On this chart, I see fecal play, choking.
Yeah, but the average well-adjusted gay man has no desire to smear fecal matter all over his partner's face
no.
or be beat up by him. But you know, that is exactly the sort of thing that these repressed conservatives are willing to pay top dollar for.
Okay. As well as the services of transsexuals, I understand.
Yes.
The shemale prostitutes in Tampa, well, they've already begun to wear Republican t-shirts and pins to signal they're ready to cater to the GOP.
Well, no one loves a hooker with a dick under her dress more than a closeted Republican. No one.
Well, let's talk about South Carolina. Senator Lindsey Graham. We obtained a copy of his schedule here, Marie, and you can see.
Right, you can see he has left 2-hour blocks of time, which we assume is for getting his balls drained by a tranny named Chandrell Mercedes.
Yes, well, we spoke to Tampa gay prostitutes earlier today. Let's take a look.
Please.
All these old fatty boys. I'm gonna go get some Tina. We'll party.
I was hoping to make some money and maybe buy a plane ticket to see my aunt down in Houston. Go Mitt Romney.
It sounds like they're really looking forward to it.
Yes, but it will also be exhausting. A lot of the Republicans repeatedly call the prostitutes fat or start crying after they've had sex with them.
I suppose the prostitutes are shoring up on their politics so they can talk to the Republicans.
Ha ha, Andrea, what do you think this is, Pretty Woman? They're just there to get fucked.
Yeah.
I have sinned against you, my Lord. And I would ask that your precious blood.
Hey, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana. Daylight come and me won't go home. Day, me say day, me say day, me say day. Oh, daylight come and me won't go home.
All right. Julia and Lee, we appreciate it. And I'm sure you guys are going to have a lot more jokes for the rest of the campaign here.
Oh,
they just keep coming.
What? Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
What is Fox News? It's just a parade of propaganda, isn't it? It's just a festival of ignorance. What? Why, a million
Fox
people
News?
Are dead in Iraq. Come on, this is ridiculous. What's the point of this? This is insane.
Well, I love
people
Fox
at home,
News.
Go outside. Go hug
Lee,
your children.
You should be more.
Well, Fox
you
News
should be more
be
worried.
Love your family, you know.
And you get all the news
at Fox News.
All the news you can at Fox News. All right, thanks,
and
guys.
And I think. Oh, okay.
All right, that's it. All right. We're also talking about Captain Kirk this morning. And hey, because it's Saturday morning, we're having some fun. Greg, you've got the cushiest job in the world.
Yeah, look who just beamed aboard right now. The ladies from the Starship Enterprise. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
How are you?
Okay, their friend Bones, you know him as Dr. McCoy, just wrote a new book on Captain Kirk and the way he was able to woo beautiful women like this. It's all coming up. Stay with us, please.
You are the one I never open up to you. I keep it all up inside. Wanna act like you got my.
that to proceed with the order of business?
The question is on the adoption of the resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. Pending of the chair, the ayes have it. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Hello, Swamp Master.
85 days to the election.
Okay. Well, here we go.
The race to define Paul Ryan is on.
The race to define Paul Ryan.
All-out sprint to define.
War being waged over defining Paul Ryan.
Would you like to play Paul Ryan trivia with us?
I would love to.
All right. Before he became a congressman, he was a prom king.
Voted biggest gym rat.
One of Paul Ryan's earliest jobs on Capitol Hill involved plenty of tequila.
My veins run with cheese.
Ryan's hobbies include hunting and fishing.
Seriously considered becoming a professional skier.
He's a good man. He's a family man.
I even think ice fishing is interesting.
The ideological leader of the Republicans in Congress.
You'll find Rage Against the Machine and Led Zeppelin on his iPod.
I don't think he's had sugar in like 5 or 6 years. Hearing some comparisons of Congressman Ryan to former President Reagan.
Paul Ryan is a lot like Reagan.
Reagan-esque attributes. Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. Big time.
He's an extremist with unpopular views.
Right-wing extremist.
A right-wing ideologue.
What's the matter with being an ideologue? I mean, an ideologue means you stand for something.
Good golly, Miss Marley!
More, more. I'm laughing, shaking my head.
Wait, what's happened?
We're getting ready to go to the state fair.
Oh, yeah, you gotta see this down here. So, hey, like I said, she must not be from Iowa. So, hey, all right.
This is a really strange Monday.
It is.
Take these eyelashes off, I can't see. Concealer on my face to cover up my brim.
premises. You trying to transform me makes you my arch nemesis. I can only be me, nothing more, nothing less. Tattoos on my chest, rapping about selling sex. Yeah, I gotta scream, let it all out. Could be found dead from the words coming out my mouth. Ain't a gangster and never been a thug, but I've sold a little drugs and I'll tear up the club. Bite my nails to the nub, middle finger stay up. $2 for a slug and I'm still smoking. Bring me a wand, cause that girl hot. I bring the steam out your teapot, I am hip hop. Tip me over, little beauty, cause I am a beast. No matter what you say on the internet, I run the streets, yeah. I can only be me, yeah. Yeah, same old keys, yeah. I can only be me, I can only be me. What you get is what you see, yeah.
Top 10 reasons why you should call 1-800-RON-PAUL and ask for your donations to be refunded right away. Number 10, there is $2.5 million left in the presidential war chest, $300,000 left in the congressional war chest, and there is no war going on. Ron Paul is retiring. Number 9, Ron Paul's personal financial disclosure says he is worth approximately $5 million and you probably need your money more than he does, especially if this economic downward trend continues, as we know it will. Number 8, according to the FEC, Federal Elections Commission, if you request your money back, Ron Paul's offices have to return it to you. Number 7, also according to the Federal Elections Commission, Ron Paul cannot legally spend any of that money on private or personal expenses, so he doesn't get to use it anyway. Now, obviously, there are ways around that, and what Ron Paul can do with that money is give it to Campaign for Liberty, as it will once again surely turn into an unemployment fund for Ron Paul campaign staffers, or, you know, pay people exorbitant bonuses like Jesse Benton, who's already made almost $600,000 from the Ron Paul presidential campaign, and therefore maybe get it back or do some other. Of course, he can do whatever he wants with it, but history hath shown what has happened to money left in Ron Paul's hands after he's not running for office. Number 6. At the end of this reporting period, the money in the Ron Paul coffers will be turned over to Campaign for Liberty, a top-down think tank that is run by Jesse Benton and John Tate to help Goldman Sachs candidates like Ted Cruz get elected. Number 5. All of that money will still be at the disposition of Jesse Benton and John Tate, two political operatives who clearly don't know what the hell they are doing, were co-opted by the GOP military-industrial complex, and therefore Campaign for Liberty will not speak out against the wars. Which might have something to do, although it might be more personal, as to why I was personally banned from speaking at a local Campaign for Liberty meeting in Harford County, Maryland, after being invited by the local organizers. But it is something that is certainly a disturbing trend for those of us who are watching Ron Paul Inc. morph into Rand Paul Inc., the jettisoning of the anti-war message that is so essential to the message of liberty. Number 4, Campaign for Liberty will be promoting the future political career of Senator Rand Paul, who sold out and endorsed Mitt Romney while Ron Paul's supporters were fighting for liberty on the RNC convention floor. Number 3, if you do not approve of the way the campaign spent your money, then encourage responsibility in future candidates by taking it out of the campaign's hands when they squander it. And this is important to note for when you do call and ask for a refund of your campaign donations, that if you are so compelled, that you state the reason and that you make sure that your complaint is registered and that people know why you don't have faith in them continuing to handle this money or Ron Paul doing what he would do with this money. Number 2, Jesse Benton and John Tate can give themselves a big fat bonus and raises with that money if you let them hang on to it. And the number 1 reason you should ask for your donation back from the Ron Paul campaign, drum roll, there are freedom fighters out there who are still working hard to promote liberty, like RJ Harris, Oath Keepers, Liberty Candidates, Cop Block, Adam vs. the Man, Tag, etc. They are really, they really, really need the money to keep the fight going. Give it to the local organizers who you know are going to spend it on promoting liberty.
When you look on this stage under all these bright lights, you just see some guys that you don't really like at all. Grow some balls when you choose tonight.
If you vote for me, you'll be doing the country a really, really big favor. Trust me, you can thank me later when I legalize everything. I can guarantee you'll be much, much more happy with me. I can satisfy all your needs for shady activities as you please, like prostitutes and drugs, banned skin rugs, automatic weapons, exposing your erections. It's high time you vote for Einstein. I'll legalize everything, euthanizing old people, pushing bald eagles. I'll fire the regulators off his message for the paper. It's high time for Einstein. I legalize everything.
If you vote for him, you'll be helping the nation,
God's favorite nation.
Live like the founding fathers did, never have to bother with laws against anything. He can guarantee you'll be much more happy and free.
Constitutionally,
if you want to see tyrannies of vice realized, we should legalize
public urination.
Check.
Without taxation.
Yep,
buying the election.
Exposing our erections.
You got it.
It's high time you vote for Einstein.
I'll legalize everything. Extreme religious sex, interspecies sex. If you're wondering how I spell those, then you'll just have to guess.
It's high time for
Einstein.
You'll legalize everything.
Every single inconceivable, smokeable, drinkable thing.
Now who wants to see my erection?
Me! Don't we go! Me! 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 Me!
Legalize everything.
And in other news, Mitt Romney graciously accepted the thing he paid millions of dollars for last night at the Republican National Convention. Standing before a crowd gathered in the Tampa Bay Times Forum, the candidate sincerely thanked Republicans all across America for so generously giving him the thing he has wantonly and desperately spent over $50 million of his own personal fortune trying to achieve since 2008. In other news, Jeb Bush warns RNC attendees of the bad Cialis going around in the parking lot. A bunch of numbers from where Daddy works means no trip to Disney World. And a woman knew ever since the age of 40 she didn't want children.
That's not even funny.
This is Charlie Bolden, NASA Administrator, speaking to you via the broadcast capabilities of the Curiosity rover, which is now on the surface of Mars.
Beamed over millions of miles, this historic audio has become the first recording of a human voice to be transmitted back to Earth from the surface of another planet. The message from a NASA administrator was sent from the Curiosity rover, sitting in uncharted territory on Mars. The robotic lab has also continued snapping pictures of the Martian landscape. NASA hailed the audio transmission, hoping it will inspire a new generation to look to the stars.
As Curiosity continues her mission, we hope that the words of the administrator will be an inspiration to someone who is alive today, who will become the first to stand upon the surface of the planet Mars. Like the great Neil Armstrong, they'll be able to speak aloud in first person at that point of the next giant leap in human exploration.
Curiosity will soon begin taking its first atmospheric readings for analysis. NASA also hopes to drive the rover longer distances as it goes in search of life on Mars.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long funny ears, kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Showing that there really is nowhere that you can't get an internet connection, surfing the web on the back of a donkey.
So I don't miss any news. I send pictures back to my family.
while I'm having fun on the donkeys.
At this park in Hoshaya in southern Galilee, visitors dressed in biblical robes and headdresses can enjoy free Wi-Fi, thanks to routers around the animals' necks.
Put it, the router on the neck of the donkeys, and now you're part of the modern world.
I think about teenage. He took some pictures. He wants to change his profile in Facebook in the real time. He can do it.
So, whether you like it or not, expect to be tagged next time you're on a leisurely donkey ride through the Middle East.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are?
Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace. He has no manners when he eats his food. He's fat and lazy and extremely rude.
But if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
And a little bit of sex news for you here. NASA has officially asked Russia to stop filming pornography on the International Space Station. The station has served as a set for Russian pornographic films since 2007, when the country decided to produce their own pornographic films featuring their astronauts in order to raise money for their struggling space program. Initially, NASA was able to look the other way when the films were limited to low-budget gonzo pornography shot mostly on handheld cameras, but now claim that the elaborate group sex scenes that the Russians are filming is interfering with the station's intended purpose as a research facility. The Russian space agency released their own statement on the issue, saying sex in zero gravity is a growing fetish in Europe. There are no rules in space.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are.
Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book. To fool the people is his only thought. And though he's slippery, he still gets caught.
But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you may grow up to be a fish. A new kind of jumped up slippery fish.
Unknown until it was spotted, first by fishermen off the coast of Indonesia in the 1990s. It looked like an octopus, but it could morph its shape in an instant to appear as seemingly any animal around it. At first, no one had any idea what it was.
The first time I saw it, I just was blown away. You couldn't get a more spectacular animal. It really is the pinnacle of wizardry.
Biologist Mark Norman was the first scientist to study this seemingly shapeless creature. He named it the mimic octopus.
The mimic octopus makes itself look like a living, moving animal. So it pulls all of its arms around behind its body and swims along like a poisonous flatfish called a banded sole. In other cases, if it's getting attacked, it puts six arms down a hole and raises the other two arms to look like a poisonous sea snake that has bands along its body. If that's not enough, it'll swim along looking like a poisonous lionfish with these banded arms looking like the banded spines that come off these very deadly fish.
And all the monkeys are in the zoo.
Every day you meet quite a few.
So you see, it's all up to you. You can be better than you are. You could be swinging on a star.
Ready to wake up, you're going to wake up. And if you're not ready, you're going to stay pretending that you're just a little, poor little me. And since you're all here and engaged in this sort of inquiry and listening to this sort of lecture, I assume that you're all on the process of waking up. Or else you're teasing yourselves with some kind of flirtation with waking up, which you're not serious about. But I assume maybe you are, not serious but sincere, that you are ready to wake up. So then, when you're in the way of waking up and finding out who you really are, what you do is what the whole universe is doing at the place you call here and now. You are something the whole universe is doing in the same way that a wave is something that the whole ocean is doing. The real you is not a puppet which life pushes around. The real deep down you is the whole universe. So then, when you die, you're not going to have to put up with everlasting non-existence, because that's not an experience. A lot of people are afraid that when they die, they're going to be locked up in a dark room forever and sort of undergo that. But one of the most interesting things in the world, this is a yoga, this is a way of realization. Try and imagine what it will be like to go to sleep and never wake up. Think about that. Children think about it. It's one of the great wonders of life. What will it be like to go to sleep and never wake up? And if you think long enough about that, something will happen to you. You will find out, among other things, that it will pose the next question to you. What was it like to wake up after having never gone to sleep? That was when you were born. You see, you can't have an experience of nothing. Nature abhors a vacuum. So after you're dead, the only thing that can happen is the same experience, or the same sort of experience, as when you were born. In other words, we all know very well that after people die, other people are born. And they're all you. Only you can only experience it one at a time. Everybody is I. You all know you're you. And wheresoever beings exist throughout all galaxies, it doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you coming into being. You know that very well. Only you don't have to remember the past. In the same way, you don't have to think about how you work your thyroid gland or whatever else it is in your organ. You don't have to know how to shine the sun. You just do it. Like you breathe. Doesn't it really astonish you that you are this fantastically complex thing? And that you're doing all of this and you never had any education in how to do it?
Surprise! Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you and make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired of waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good or speak too wise. If you can dream, not make dream your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors both the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, and see the thing you gave your life for broken, and stoop and build it up again with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose, and start again at your beginning and never breathe one word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve their turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will that says to man, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
As cities develop, sometimes old buildings just don't cut it anymore. The Three Gorges Hotel and Passenger Terminal of Chongqing Port in China are 107 metres and 32 stories of past their best architecture. So they're being demolished to make way for a new transport hub and tourism centre, which means a very big explosion. The blast sent 63,000 cubic metres of history down in just a few seconds, whilst thousands of locals gathered to watch their city change forever.
Whoa, it's us! We're in a lot of trouble!